I'm going to ambush you with another one.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite saying?
Oh. Favorite saying. There was one that I used to like. I think I felt I probably butcher it up now. I used to always use it, just more as like a saying for myself. Is the lemon worth the squeeze? Is it juice worth the squeeze? Yeah.
The results worth the effort.
Yeah, it's more of like a motto type thing of, you know, when you look at things, all the activities and things that you got to do in life, you got to kind of, you know, balance it out and say, hey, is this worth the effort that you're going to put into it? It's a simple one, probably because, again, I butchered it and it was like, you know, just a few words. And if it was, you know, sometimes you have these people that can, man, they can just pull out these random things right in the book. And you're just like, how do you remember, like, two or three sentences from a book that you read or a movie that you, and it's just like they can just kind of pull these out. It's impressive what some people have. What about you?
I there are a couple. Mine's a little bit different because yours is about like weighing, I don't want to say risk reward, but like effort return kind of thing.
Yes.
I have two. One is, the harder I work, the luckier I get. Which is attributed to like Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin. No one really knows who said it, right? But the harder I work, the luckier I get. And it's true. I think hard work produces better luck. And then, I don't know how well it applies, but Henry Ford also had a saying, chop your own wood and it'll warm you twice.
Yeah.
Again, effort. I guess maybe effort quotes are my jam I'm into those. So chop your own wood. It'll warm you twice. I like that one. All right. We've got, it's tax time. Or tax time is wrapping up. If you're listening to this more than a couple of days after it's posted, it's too late for you. Right. Or you filed an extension because the tax deadline's quickly approaching. So we've just got a fun one today. We're not digging in on, you know, we talked politics last time and I thought that was informative, but this is going to be kind of more of an interesting one. We're talking taxes this week. So, Ryan, you ready?
And I think, you know, this kind of quickly somewhat becomes a little political though too, right? We talked about politics last time, but you know, you talk about taxes and people just think about like, well, who's going to raise them and what side's going to do this, right? So it becomes a little bit, although that's not what our intent is really just, again, more, you have the tax side and, you know, what does that mean for the market side and how do they correlate or not correlate? That's more of what we're going over.
Yeah. This is just backward looking saying, what have tax rates been? So I think it's going to get informative, but first, let's talk where the markets have been lately. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You're listening to Casual Friday, Financial Insights Podcast, where financial advisors and certified financial planners from Ford Financial Group and their guests help you to navigate the difficult maze of financial planning and saving for retirement. We're talking about the issues and questions relating to finance that face our clients every day.
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Brian Ullman, joined by Ryan Louie, another advisor here, along with me and others at Ford Financial Group. I don't think I did a good job with our intros and outros last time. So this is where I'm going to pause and say, welcome if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Shut Theirs Down, Overcast if you're Ryan. If you're watching this on YouTube, welcome also. If you're doing any of those things and you haven't done this already yet, I would encourage you to subscribe so you can listen or see us regularly. So for example, Joe Perry on his morning runs, get to hear our voices in his ear as he is on the struggle bus, making sure he gets yet another mile in. But we do these on a regular basis. We try and pump these out a couple of times a month. Sometimes during busy seasons, our focus is more on our clients than creating content, of course. And so we might have a little bit bigger breaks like we've had here just recently. So, let's pick up where we left off in the intro, Ryan. Let's check in on markets here. You kind of see what's been going on here. Let's go year to date here. The orange is the S&P 500 through the recording today, up about 9%, I'm rounding here, but about 9.25% for the year. Solid. I mean, we're not up at the peak for the year. We've come off of it a little bit, but man,
yeah, we had a great first quarter for the equity markets. This was one of those ones that you would definitely say we're in a sprint for the first 3 months. That's, you know, not probably sustainable for the entire race, but a very, very good start for the equity markets to start things off.
Well, when you, after a run like you've been on, not just January, February, March, but also November and December. So November, December, yeah. January, February, March, 5 months going up and to the right, you're going to expect some things to cool off, but we haven't even really cooled off. This isn't cooling off. This is just markets waiting for data. Last week, we had a little bit of a pullback as investors were waiting on the unemployment number, which was a surprisingly good number. Now investors this week are waiting on the CPI or an inflation report, essentially. And so that can kind of cool things off a little bit, although today we're essentially flat.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you take a look at that bottom line, the yellow line is the bottom market, right? Yes. And so, you know, there's two sides to most people's portfolios, at least a lot of the people that we work with. You know, they have the stock side that's doing well, the bond side is lagging behind a bit. As you can see, really what the problem is this year is that we just don't know what the Fed is going to do with interest rates in terms of, you know, maybe they should lower it, but this, how many times? And, you know, throughout this first 3 months, it's varied. Like, it just, the number in which we keep thinking they're going to change interest rates or lower interest rates gets modified, and the markets digest the bond markets, you know, are reacting to that number.
Yeah. This is, I don't want to say an oversimplification because these are the numbers, but many people have not just versions of S&P 500 in their portfolio, but also mid-sized companies that's not aren't represented here, small-sized companies, we're not showing the Russell here, and different kinds of bonds also. This is the aggregate bond index. So whether you have muni bonds or mortgage-backed bonds or high-yield bonds, whatever it is. Yeah, so this is a simplification. But I think also interesting, the S&P 500 is outpacing the NASDAQ. Because NASDAQ is what really went gangbusters. And if we do a rolling 12 months, you'll see the numbers change a little bit. The NASDAQ's outperforming the S&P 500. But if we're just, you know, the bonds are still essentially flat over the last 12 months and are negative by about 1.5% here on the year. And then what seems to be per the usual, the Dow lagging behind, doing well, but lagging behind those kind of
technology heavy sector or technology heavy indexes.
It's those mega caps. If you haven't read it already and you're a client of ours, we'll be sending out our financial planning newsletter shortly where we address in some of the market commentary those individual names that have really been propelling markets forward. So it's been tech heavy, and the S&P 500 is tech heavy because it's market weighted. So you have the biggest companies, which tend to be tech companies, really taking up the biggest piece of the pie. I'll say interestingly, though, you look month to date, right? We're a week and a half into April. Excuse me. Everything's negative. The Dow is the most negative. The S&P underperforming bonds, even though bonds are down here in the first week and a half. You know, this is a little bit of a cooling off. We'll see what comes after the CPI report. You think this is going to continue?
I mean, I would think that it would make more sense at this point to see exactly what the Fed is going to do. If we kind of just hang out right here, that's not actually the worst thing. Again, after sprinting off the line to start the year, if we kind of go sideways, definitely not a bad thing. And one thing to point out too, even on the ag or the bond index too, this is price. So, you know, people do get interest payments from these bonds that aren't a part of this. So, you know, while the prices may be down, you are at least picking up interest usually as a bondholder. And so you can, you know, be making headway that way as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not all performance. You're going to get interest income from your bonds as well. And so it's not all bad, but I don't care what kind of bondholder you are. It's just not great when you're seeing bonds struggle in this way. While we wait on the Federal Reserve to, like you said, what they're going to do with interest rates, I don't think they even know, right? It's data dependent, and they've had the luxury of being able to address only inflation because we've had full employment. But maybe that'll change in the second half of the year. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think we are all still waiting for the time in which the rates do come down. Like, we know that's a win, not if type scenario. And so the bonds, my thought is they're eventually going to start doing well, but it's going to depend when that Fed lowers interest rates definitively. Instead of us kind of guessing that they should do it or they will do it this many months out, and then they end up not doing it. That's what's causing the fits right now. Is that
can I venture a guess? I'm just going to go out there and venture a guess. I think in the second half they cut once, maybe twice, for a total of 0.5%, getting them to the higher end of 5%, and that's where they're going to leave it. That's where they're going to want to leave it. Short of a recession that they're having to battle, that's all they're going to do. They're going to throw everybody a bone and cut rates 0.25% and call it a year.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable. It kind of goes into a little bit of our topic that we're going to talk about today with taxes, and you know, taxes are usually related to, or at least these days, people kind of relate to the debt. You know, there's obviously some debt issues with high interest rates that the U.S. has to pay on its own.
No doubt.
Debt issue. So you kind of do wonder, like, how long can they actually hold out for? And does that actually start playing into this?
Yep. So let's get into this. So it's tax time, like we led with. I think you and I both found this interesting. We saw this week. This is individual tax rates over time. And this is just timely. This is not actionable information necessarily. But what we're looking at here are the individual tax rates over time. And you can see, boy, there's been a pretty big change really starting in 1980.
Yeah. Well, from past to present. And this is one of those things that if you don't go and look back at, I don't know that if you pointed to your 20 or 30, maybe even your 40-year-old and talked about taxes and tax rates, that they are going to be realized that tax rates were so high decades ago, right. Because we have been in a pretty reasonable tax rate, you know, at least my majority of my adult life. And so if you come accustomed to that, but you forget that there were times when, rates were through the roof.
Sure. Yeah. I wasn't paying taxes in 1978, so it didn't really apply to me at that point, you know, having the top end rate at like 70%, they were as high as 91%, World War II. So which kind of skews that highest average rate number of 57%. But the low end rate's been 10% for a very long time, a little bit higher than that kind of through the 90s.
Yeah, but we spent the last, you know, good 30, about 30 years with the tax rates being in a pretty tight range on the high end and low end as well. But the high tax rate is the one that really gets adjusted more so than I say historically the lower rates do.
Well, and I would, yeah, no doubt about that. And I think this is probably, you look at this and you're like, oh, this may be why people expect tax rates to increase. I don't think Congress has the stomach to do it, but you look at this and you say, well, historically the top end rate has been higher and we've got a pretty sizable budget deficit that's not being helped by lower rates. Maybe rates are going to go up. I know that we have some sunsetting of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act provisions that were enacted when Trump was president. They could come back, I suppose, and there's been some talk of that. But, you know, I don't know. It might be a good reason for a Roth conversion, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's something I guess we have to think about for the end of 2025 is, you know, if it sunsets, some of the rates will go back to what they were, you know, about eight years ago.
Yeah. Well, and the personal rates are sunsetting. The new corporate tax rates are not. So if you recall part of the corporate tax, or part of the 2017 tax reform lowered the corporate tax to 21% below the average, excluding the U.S., of 22%. But look at where we were before. We were the most expensive place to do business, maybe still the best place to do business, but 35% corporate tax rate.
You know what would have been interesting too here is if they had something like this for some of the other personal tax rates. I mean, you really have no idea what people are paying abroad in terms of taxes on the individual side. It would be interesting to see that as well, but this is
it would surprise me also if they went a little higher.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think definitely you go to Europe and so some of those countries, you would expect that they might be paying higher rates. So And we do know this, like we should be thankful for where we are, at least right now, because on a historical basis, we are at, you know, low historical tax rates, no matter how much we dislike actually this time of year, seeing the numbers, knowing how much we have to pay. It is painful, but at least on a historical basis, it's lower than where it has been.
Yeah. And this is also the tax rate, not the effective tax rate.
Yeah, so you might want to go into that.
Amazon famously was paying zero, right? Yes. So this isn't what companies are paying. This is what their bracket is, or their rate is, more specifically. So it's interesting to see this. You know, good that we're competitive. Do we need to be cheap? I don't know. And I think the next slide will kind of show why maybe this is getting, some people think this is going to be rethought. This chart shows that the federal debt has been rising over the past decade relative to GDP. And so the question we're asking is whether the economy can support that level of debt. And that's why it's important to compare it to GDP.
One of the key concerns when people look at this is how sustainable is this? And, you know, there is no timetable for how high the debt could get before we actually have to face it. But there's really two ways in which you deal with it. It comes down to productivity or taxes, right? Like, I mean, if you want to get the debt under control and start to bring it down, right. you have productivity on one side, you have taxes on the one side. And in all seriousness, probably can be a combination of the two if you really want to deal with it. It doesn't have to be one or the other. But because there's only two real options, taxes is one of those ones that you got to be concerned with. And I think that people just, I don't know if it's pessimistically, they just believe that taxes are going to be sometime higher in the future because of all of the problems that we're in. Even though I will say the last 30 years have not dictated or shown that, you know, rates are going up.
Right. Right. I think, this is current through October of last year, but one of the troubling things is not just is our total debt north of 100% of GDP, but so is our net debt. So that excludes debt held by the US. So us owing ourselves, which is maybe a better representation, that's pushing close to 100% also. And there's been a fair amount of academic papers that say your GDP, your rate of growth slows significantly when you have north of 100%. I think it's 100%. But when your debt to GDP ratio is really out of control, that creates problems. So,
There's one other thing like worth pointing out too, and relaying, tying this back to the stock market, which is kind of what we always talk about is, right. You know, does higher tax rates equal, a less productive stock market? And, you know, surprisingly, since 1950, there's been 13 instances in which a mixture or individually, like personal corporate capital gains rates have gone up.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, in all 13 periods that year that it went up, the market was up. So it doesn't necessarily, you know, it is not one of those factors where you could say definitively, you know, taxes go up, market's going to go down, right? You can't draw that correlation to it, which is a good thing. I do get where people would think that it could kill off the markets. And therefore, it's like, you know, oh, geez, it's time to get out of the markets if we know, you know, tax rates are going to go up. But that has not historically been the case.
Right, right, right. No, you're absolutely right. One does not mean the other. And it's, I would say even if it was correlated, it doesn't equal causation, but it's not even necessarily correlated. So that's a pretty big leap to take saying one affects the other. That's a really good point. Well, some interesting charts. I think even the first one was maybe the most interesting, just taking a look, excuse me, at the high-end tax rates, because paying taxes is a real bummer. But you realize, oh man, it's been worse before and it may be worse later. Maybe just write that check and get on with it, right?
Have some appreciation in historical context.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What's on your mind these days?
I know you probably have an opinion on as you have your own personal experiences. My wife and I went to San Jose, for like a day trip, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to do the whole EV thing again. And I do not do this very often. Oftentimes we go, we take the gas car just so it's like, it's quick and easy. I might not even have to gas up on a short trip because we went to San Jose, which I strategically placed as it's the shortest place to go to where I least likely have problems because we're not, you know, it's like a 2-hour and 20-minute drive each way. They had a lot of chargers. I get to
your EV or are you talking about your wife's?
Mine. I took mine. I get to I mapped it out, like get to Santana Row. They have Electrify America has like 16 or so chargers. And so I get there. I drop my wife off at Santana Row, figuring out I'll go charge up like and I'll meet you. I get there. I'm in a line of cars waiting to get to one of the stalls. That takes about 25 minutes to 30 minutes to get into one of the stalls. You have cars honking because we're all kind of blocking the traffic and there's a lot of cars going in through the mall. So you have a lot of people honking, people tapping on windows, like speed, you know, can you move forward? And so it's real, it becomes like stressful, you know, experience of like, it took a lot of effort to get into one of the stalls. It took about 50 minutes to charge up. I was on the opposite side of the mall, not realizing how long it would have actually taken me to walk to Santana Row. So I was like, you know what? I told my wife, I texted her. I said, you know what? I'm going to hang out the mall by myself until the car is charged. I'll come and meet you later on when it's done. It was just like, you know, it was effort. It was so much effort. Right. And so this is the second time in a row for me. And like the other time I did it was down south about 2 years ago. So it's been a while. It had not been pleasant. And my wife was texting me, we are taking the other car next time. So it's running through my mind that we're just not there yet. You know, I've had an EV for 9 years. And, you know, outside of if you're not in the Tesla network, it gets very difficult to have a good experience. Not to say you can't. It's just, I feel like it's going to be hit or miss. It depends on the luck of the draw when you leave.
So that's interesting. Because that was not my experience.
Okay.
Because what's on my mind is we just went out of town, it was my kids, spring break. And we went to we drove from the Central Valley to San Francisco and then from there to Santa Cruz and then from Santa Cruz home. And, I would say you had me worried based on some of your previous experiences.
You
100% scared. You scared the heck out of me.
Maybe I just set your expectations really, really low.
Yeah, no. This is what I tell you. There it is. There's the car charging. That's my car. I got the ribbon. Anyway. So I charge it up to 100%, which I only do when I'm, you know, leaving town. Drove to Manteca, sort of. Charged it at a Rivian charging station.
Okay.
Went into Bass Pro Shop and got myself a Bass Pro Shop hat while I waited and Henry used the restroom. Charged it to full, got to the game, went to the game, parked in San Francisco, went to the game. Then drove from there to Santa Cruz. And then the next day filled it up at a charger. I will say there were 6 charging stations that were open. 4 of them worked, but it was a fast charger, charged it right up. And then on the way home the next day, we drove, stopped in Gilroy. I just topped it off. I didn't really need to. I would have made it all the way home. There's no problem at all. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. And this is okay. So this is my thoughts. This is my, like, outside, I mean, again, outside the Tesla network, because when I had a Tesla, it was much easier. Yes, the last 2 of my experiences were not great. My 2 of 2 experiences. Now, I will say I could probably go 4 or 5 times, then maybe they would be better. I will say, though, if you have 2 of even 8 times that don't go your way, it does start to wear on you because, you know, those times that it doesn't go right kind of really bring down, you know, the experience overall of whether you want to do it or not. I'm a holy for like, keep trying. Maybe you will continue to be like, be fortunate, not have my experience. Maybe I have bad luck. Who knows?
Well, I gambled, and granted my car it's not like Tesla, but my car has a charging network, whereas yours doesn't.
Sure.
And I charged on a Rivian charger for my first charging stop.
Yeah.
And those aren't going to be broken down and aren't going to be filled up because they're for Rivian's, right?
Right.
Rivian just signed a deal with Tesla. Rivian is sending all of the current owners Tesla adapters, and the Tesla network is now open for Rivians.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Which is huge.
Next time I go out of town, I'm not even gonna have to think twice because I'm gonna have superchargers kind of everywhere.
Yeah. And it makes a difference. So for those listening, again, we are 10 plus years into, you know, Tesla's having chargers, and you have everyone else on these modified versions and private versions and everything else. And to be honest with you, it's a crapshoot at best, I'd say, when you're outside that
leading edge. It's still leading edge. It is not mainstream in the way maybe some people think it is if you're not in a Tesla. But
yes,
I'll tell you what, using the frunk and the like awesome cruise control autopilot thing that goes on in EVs.
Well, I mean, that's partially why I decided to take the car, is because I enjoy driving the EV better than the gas car. I just like the driving experience is so much better for me.
Better.
And so I was like, that's the reason why I'm going to try to pull the trigger and do this short trip on driving the EV. But like, it's just the charging was a miss for me once again.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, I had such a good experience. I'm thinking, like, you know, when we go out of town for Thanksgiving, we're taking my car. So we'll see. I don't know. Stay tuned. Jury's out.
Yeah.
You also need a new set of tires after less than 3 years, which has me really worried because these cars are heavy and go through tires like an F1 car.
Yes.
That's given me pause, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I was charging next to other Rivian guys. One of the guys had a VIN number of 38.
Oh.
He'd had his Rivian since like 2019, I think, or something like that. Yeah. He was like,
because he has the pickup.
No, it was the SUV. He got it before, maybe it was 21. He got it like they made a few and then stopped production.
Oh, for like years.
He's like one of the first ones, and
it's
he said
a demo version almost.
Yeah, yeah. He said the suspension was terrible, but I don't have any of those problems. So
yeah,
you know, what are you gonna do? Anyway, all right. Well, let's leave it there. This is a good one. I think, you know, tax time. Well, let's talk tax rates. Let's see. If you have, I can't imagine you do, but if you're still listening and have questions about what we went over, you can email us at info@fordfg.com. Again, subscribe so you can listen to this where you listen to podcasts or watch this on YouTube. We have an event coming up with Mayor of Fresno, talking with our clients about what's going on in the city, what's going on in investment in Fresno. We had a lot of questions about politics still, even after our last podcast episode. And it's, you know, we went through there and kind of were able to demonstrate that markets aren't dictated by who's president. But what matters a lot, and as O'Neill said, all politics is local. And what matters is what's going on in your own backyard. And that's where I think the mayor is going to be able to come in, talk with us, and give a little bit of perspective. So if you're interested in that, you can also email info@fordfg.com. It's available for clients and for their guests. And we look forward to seeing you there on May 1st. So, Ryan, I think until next time.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right.
The advisors with Ford Financial Group are registered representatives with, and securities are offered through, LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice is offered through Perennial Investment Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Ford Financial Group and Perennial Investment Advisors are separate entities from LPL. The opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Stock investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. The economic forecasts set forth in this podcast may not develop as predicted. Ford Financial Group, Perennial Investment Advisors, and LPL Financial do not provide tax or legal advice or services. This information is not intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security referred to herein.